7 feet. Barren, strange fruit. Blood on the leaves. And blood at the roots. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze. Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. Pastoral scene of the gallant South. Them big bulging eyes and the twisted mouth.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to the French Connection Sunday night edition. Today's date is the 30th day of September 2007. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith. It's great to have you here for another installment of the French Connection. We are proud to have a returning guest with us again today to talk about issues that that are recurring in a book he wrote some year ago, year and a half ago actually. Was he completed his research and then actually published about a year ago. We were working together kind of clandestinely to get his information compiled during the first 6 or 8 months of his research, and he finally, when things were right for him, made the move to get this thing published and put it out all over the world. It's named The Synagogue of Satan. You'll recognize that name, and you'll also recognize Andrew Hitchcock as being somebody who we have a great deal of respect for here on the French Connection, and he's a friend of mine, and that's all I can say about Andrew. He and I have been in conversation repeatedly on many subjects, and we're going to talk about a few in his book, as well as some of them about the information that's being circulated today and how important it all is to our listeners as well as to the world at large. So I'm going to bring him up right now. Andrew, are you with me?
Yes, sorry, Daryl.
It's great to have you with me here, Andrew. Of course, our technology is really low grade, and I apologize to the listeners for that, and we're going to try to make sure they hear everything we talk about today, Andrew. You've decided to allow the French Connection to put small segments of your book up on our website, and hoping that people will become interested in the information, as well as possibly look at possibly buying the book as a way of informing people around us. And I think both of those goals are laudable and very doable. So do you want to explain to the people what we've got planned here?
Yes, what we were talking about doing was the whole book will eventually go up there just in different segments when there's a particular subject that you want to talk about. It's been broken down into 10 segments, and I believe that you've put up the last segment, which is 2003 to 2006, and then we can talk a bit about that area. And then in a couple of weeks or whenever you want to, put up another segment and then maybe talk about that area. And what I would ask the listener is, the main reason I'm doing this is I want to help the French Connection with their funding, and I would hope that by putting this out for free to people, that if they are short of money and can't afford the book, that they feel that they've gained information from reading the excerpts on the site, that they would consider making a small donation to the French Connection by the PayPal facility.
We are actually moving toward working hand in hand with a book repository that has collected books that are out of print, and you'll notice that our concentration on Henry Ford, on Nesta Webster, on Elizabeth Dilling, and on Arthur Kessler's books, all of them are dated, all of them are out of print as we speak. And so basically what we've tried to do here is make sure that these histories are not lost and that they make their way into the mainstream. And so we've started, have this non-for-profit organization that is going to hopefully disseminate as much information from these important authors. And you are important in that group as well, because your book has done what other books have failed to do, and that is put a chronology on the machinations of this particular group. Now, why we started with the last section first was to try to entice people into how this conspiracy and what we're in now as a conspiracy. And we're going to try to possibly work backwards from the present, because it is very difficult reading in the beginning. There's an awful lot of history, and if you recall your history classes, I used to love them, but I know that half or more of my fellow students were bored silly from history. But I'm hoping that we can draw enough attention to these facts that going along backwards will be able to get people very interested in how all this came to be. Now, we're going to start with 2006, and let's discuss for a moment and give us your synopsis that your book provided on the present.
Well, I agree with you, Daryl. The reason that I thought of going backwards as well is I think a lot of people, they think the book is just the Rothschild family as of going back to 1750 and what have you. But, of course, it actually goes right up until 2006. And so the real linking point of the book and what really makes it flow is it's following this same group as they've essentially gone from generation to generation and handed the power on. What I will point out, what you said about with your site, with having the Webster stuff up there and Elizabeth Dilling and Henry Ford, I did actually get hold of transcripts of Henry Ford's work on the internet before, but when I actually tried to order the books myself, I tried to order them from Amazon, and they were consistently delayed. They said that they were available, but they would never send them. And so the order was in the end cancelled. But something that was very interesting, someone that I know was on holiday, and they were in an airport over in Asia, I believe, and they had a copy of The International Jew in the window. It was one of about six books on display, and so it was obviously regarded as a real sort of bestseller, and it's actually an abridged version, and it's published by Global Books Johannesburg, so it's out of South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And which is interesting, and what they've got in there is you've got 16 articles, so it's probably just about one of the volumes or a selection
right.
of that.
Yeah, there are three volumes to his book, yeah.
Yeah, and then they've gone and put the Protocols of the Elders of Zion in there as well.
Yes.
And this was like in a bookshop window in an airport in Asia. I think sort of Malaysia, that type of way. So, you know, it does show that this sort of truth is getting out in these countries, but it's still obviously being repressed here because of the media control that we have.
Well, we are looking at a lockdown on the truth by the mainstream as well as by mainstream politicians today, and you know that that's happening in Europe as well as America. They're attempting to foment this next stage of war, and I think the information that we're providing is putting an awful lot of pressure on their ability to get away with it. But let's discuss for a minute here the 2006 moments here with Hamas, and you know.
Right.
They claim, they run around, here's the interesting thing that everyone knows that's paid any attention to this. They're claiming to want to spread democracy worldwide, and then when the people speak, they don't allow it. They in other words, it was a farce, and they showed their hypocrisy when they would not allow the elected officials from Hamas to be the representatives of the Palestinian people after they were duly elected. Now, basically, I don't believe in democracy. I believe in constitutional republic. And I'll tell you that a democracy necessarily will end in tyranny if you know anything about what we call the Kyklos cycles. And those cycles were discussed in Greek learning with Aristotle, Plato, and others, Socrates as well, that the plebiscite will elect itself and vote itself benefits until it bankrupts the state. And when things get so badly out of shape in the government, then they will ask for a strong leader to come in, and so you will ultimately end up with tyranny. And so democracy is necessarily an evil to freedom. And by virtue of a constitutional republic, what that does is basically ensconces within the society certain limits on the democratic process so that we could never go into the stage of needing a dictatorial leader, and we would lose our ability to govern ourselves. So the idea that we would be spreading democracy around the world is a terrible idea to start with, but even by their own standards, they breached their own protocol. You want to talk a little bit about what you found?
Well, yes, I totally agree with you. What you've said about a constitutional republic is something that I support as well. What you find with democracy is basically it's defined as always going to be two big political parties, and that's it. And then, of course, as long as you've got control of both of these political parties, then it doesn't really matter which one of them gets elected, but the people get the invisible. They've got that feeling that they've got choice when they haven't got any choice at all. And what I'd say to people is, if you look at things like, we've talked about public-private partnerships and what have you, and, you know, in Britain, the Labour Party, the equivalent of your Democrats, will always, you know, for state control, and then the Conservatives, the equivalent of your Republicans, were for privatisation, have you. But you find that they all just go in the same direction, whichever one gets into power.
That's right.
And you know, history proves that. And the fact of the matter is, with these the democracies that you do see in the Western world, I mean, a good example is, in my research, I did a study on the Labour Friends of Israel and the Conservative Friends of Israel, which goes back to the Labour Party and the Conservative Party over here, and they've both got websites. And it's easy to find out if you go to their sites and you just, I can't remember the exact web address, but if you just type in Labour Friends of Israel into Google or Conservative Friends of Israel. And on the Conservative site, they actually say that they're proud to say that two-thirds of all the Conservative MPs are members.
Yeah.
And then on the Labour side, they say, they don't actually say how many members that they've got, but they say that at least 50 have been sent on all expenses paid trips to Israel since Labour got to power in 1997.
Well, see, that's exactly the same as the Americans sending almost all the congressmen that get elected over to a free junket to Israel, and God only knows what they're doing. They're probably sending them down to the streets of Tel Aviv to be filmed in brothels, and then shipped back to America, or give slipped a Mickey and have pictures taken with children or naked women or naked men. Who knows what they've got going on? But you know that the extortion game and the blackmail game against politicians has been well known for a long time, especially in light of many of the disclosures we've got here. Take a look at Mr. Blair and Mr. Brown. Mr. Brown's connection to the people up in Dunblane massacre and Lord Robertson going from a ne'er-do-well bonehead local politician to be knighted by the Queen and head of NATO because of what he helped do to cover up Gordon Brown's participation in children abuse. Now that's all been relatively well looked into. Although we don't have the smoking gun, we do have enough circumstantial evidence to make all of those claims stick. But on this 2006 period that we talked about in your book here, you do chronologize quite well the events of 2006 about Olmert and the Knesset and Jewish media and all of it. You want to go backwards in time here and maybe discuss a little bit about 2006 and how that year was marching forward for these Zionist criminals?
Yes, well, as you said, we start off with Hamas being democratically elected. We were democratically up again, but they were elected by vote. And immediately following their election, Israel demanded that he'd be cut off to Palestine, and this was done by United States, Europe, and Canada.
Yep.
And what's interesting is, if we go back to Viktor Ostrovsky, that listeners to the French Connection will be aware of, he was a former Mossad agent who wrote a book. He wrote two books about this subject of his experiences, if you like, in the Mossad, and there has been some question of whether he really is a whistleblower or not, or whether he's only given a little bit out. But certainly some of the evidence he puts forward is very interesting.
Mm.
In his second book, Other Side of Deception, he actually says, supporting the radical elements of Muslim fundamentalism it sat well, with the Mossad's general plan for the region. An Arab would an Arab world run by fundamentalists, not party to any negotiations with the West, thus leaving Israel again as the only democratic, rational country in the region. And if the Mossad could arrange for the Hamas Palestinian fundamentalists to take over the Palestinian streets, then the picture will complete. And that's what he says in his book. Mm. So it just goes to show, again, you've got this situation where, you know, it did them a favour having Hamas in charge. It wasn't something that they didn't want. It sort of did them a favour because it was like, well, we've been saying that these people are so terrible all along, and now look, they've elected this terror group and things like this, but they'll never tell you about the justifiable feeling that these Palestinians have when, you know, they're parents, grandparents were slaughtered by these people in massacres like Deir Yassin and what have you back in 1948.
Yeah, yeah. And how they were actually, they were actually...
Then the sudden smell of burning flesh here is a fruit. For the crows to pluck, for the rain to gather, for the wind to suck, for the sun to rot, for the cry.